I'm Sarah Gonzalez. Welcome to the news and why it matters. Year in review. Yay. So we will be reviewing the top stories of the year, why they matter now, why they will matter going forward. And first up, we are going to talk about hashtag Tariffageddon. Jason, I apologize you're not here so that I can properly credit Stu for the hashtag.
Thank you.
But that is the whole issue of tariffs and trade wars. That's been a central theme in this year's news headlines. And so, Glenn, I'll let you start off first with
I'm going to let everybody else be optimistic on this.
Okay.
I think that
we have to be?
Yeah, what show do you think you're on?
I'm not sure who that's going
to
be.
Well, who do you think you're talking to? You think anything's going to be more optimistic than mine?
That's a great point. So we're all going to die.
Yeah. No, we're... I have this suspicion that Donald Trump is not doing this, but others around him are playing a much more serious game with China, and it has to do with the manufacturing of chips. We could cripple them right now because we're the ones who can make them. They can't yet. And so I think this... I think some, I don't know if Donald Trump is involved, some are playing a much longer game and saying, you know what, we can cripple them right now, and it's not about tariffs, it's about getting your spies out of our companies. Stop stealing our stuff. Theft from China is outrageous. So I think that's being played under the surface, okay? I don't know. But I look at tariffs, and if I had to say what's going to happen in the next 18 to 24 months with the tariffs, I hope I'm wrong, but I think Donald Trump actually believes in them, and I think that he will play it to the last moment, and I think that last moment may cause real economic hardship, not only in America, but around the world. And I mean... not 2008 hardship, I mean real hardship. And I do also believe that it could lead to a third world war.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who say that, you know, he's just using it as a negotiation tactic. He doesn't really believe it. But I mean,
he does.
Yes, Stu, this is something that...
the 80s, that's like the one thing he's consistent about.
He has been so consistent that he is a protectionist, and this is what he believes in.
This is the only thing that you and I talked about this on the air. The only thing I knew he would do as president is impose high tariffs. He's always believed it. He's never changed.
The negotiation thing is an interesting point, though, because we hear that a lot from people in the audience who are saying, look, you know, maybe he's just negotiating here. And it's possible. I mean, I really do believe that he believes this. You know, there's a lot of evidence going back a long time. If you read some of the background books that have come out during the administration, a lot of it is about that with real colorful detail about his opinions on trade. But the idea of it being a negotiation, is this a good point at all? Like, I mean, I think, like, if for example, your wife is not paying it close enough attention to you, and you want to get her to pay closer attention, you could threaten her with infidelity. You could say, I'm going to go cheat on you if you don't start paying more attention to me. And that might work, right? Like, in theory, maybe she will start paying attention to you. First of all, is that good? Is that a good thing to do? You might get what you want by putting a gun to somebody's head, but that isn't always the right way to do it. Secondly, if you start actually cheating on your wife and having sex with someone else, you're no longer negotiating. It's no longer a tactic if you start doing it. He's put billions and billions and billions of tariffs, dollars of tariffs on the country already. It's not a negotiation when you already have gone through with the tariffs. And I think in this case, it's one of those things where the fundamental problem here with Donald Trump on tariffs is that he sees it as this competition. You know, he sees the economic pie, and there's a pie there, and I have a slice, and I can't give China a bigger slice. When free trade has been a miracle on this planet. We did this tour over the past few weeks, there's one section, and it's in Addicted to Outrage as well, a lot of it. All the positive things that have happened in the world where, you know, people, and you're talking about children dying before the age of five, that percentage has dropped by half since 1990.
We've saved more children just through the free market system. We've saved more children than if we took away all gun crime for the next 630 years.
Wow. 630 years of gun murder.
There's been more people lifted out of poverty in the last like 10 years than in the last 100 years than in the last 1,000.
Yeah.
And those statistics are all across the globe. And it's and like all the advances in China and everywhere else, they always come from allowing people to have property and be free and just economically interact with each other. And it's a really good thing that we're No kidding.
Yeah, and I think the number, there's more than one element that has led to that success, but the number one element is free trade. I think it's even more than, if you would say capitalism, you could say that as well, but capitalism, free trade is just essentially the export of capitalism. Like we have forced the Chinese government to engage in capitalism with us because it is so tempting and it's done so much good for them. And remember, we think of China as these, you know, like, oh, well, the government officials and they're all, you know, Chinese communists. There's a billion people there who are real people that, you know, if we started a charity and we could have done one one-thousandth of what has been done because of free trade, we'd all celebrate ourselves as heroes.
But it's a fundamental misunderstanding with trade. It's like, When you live on a farm and you have no real system around you, okay, you're trading with your neighbors. I'm the blacksmith, and I'm going to shoe your horses, and you're going to give me, you know, I don't know, wheat, okay?
I miss Alva, Oklahoma. Keep going.
Right, and I'm going to give the baker more wheat than you know, as payment for, in exchange for some loaves of bread from him, okay? That is a free exchange, and you don't ever say, well, wait a minute, he's exchanging more with, he's getting more of these services from all of us than we're getting from him. No, it's what do you need,
right?
Okay? Now you take that on a global scale, and it's almost like, well, I'm in an office building in New York City. I don't need the trade from the blacksmith anymore. I don't need these things, and I also don't have time to go and crack the wheat and then bring it to a baker. I'm just going to buy these things. This person is in really good financial position. These people are struggling every day for the basics. This is America. We have grown and we are buying more things because we're financially healthy and we find our way of the things that we want to create much more valuable than the stuff that we can buy made by slaves in China. We don't want to produce those things, but we need them. And so we buy them from somebody else because we're working on something else and we don't have slaves here. So, of course, we're not exporting as much because we're not, we don't have slaves to make stuff.
Your average attorney's not, your attorneys have a trade deficit with the grocery store.
Yeah. Yes.
They're not producing bread for the grocery store.
Correct.
Right. I have a huge trade deficit.
People hear the word deficit.
Yeah. I have a deficit with Taco Bell.
It's
a large trade deficit with Taco Bell. They've never paid me anything. And I've given them lots and lots of money, but in a free exchange, they gave me tacos. That's not a bad interaction. Well,
and you could do a thought experiment and go the other direction with this. Would it then be a good idea for like Ohio to have trade barriers with their surrounding states? And if that's true, would it be good for your town to have I don't think it would help you at all for your city to have.
I mean, think about this in the 1950s and prior, 40s, 50s, 60s. Should the rest of the states have a trade war with Michigan? Because all of our cars were built in Michigan.
Yeah, and that's such a crazy point that the founders put it in the Constitution that you can't do it.
Right.
They said, no, you cannot put these barriers up in between states.
Right.
It has to be free. And has that benefited us?
Who said, what is Michigan buying from us?
Yeah.
Nobody.
No, it's not the right way to look at it. And, it's an unfortunate moment because this was really something that not only was, you know, Ronald Reagan completely right on, right? Free trade, he was right on, and every conservative knew it forever.
Yeah.
But like even the Democrats had come so far on this to the point of where, like, you know, the tariffs went down in the Obama administration and they've come back up past Obama, past George W. Bush, all the way back to the beginning of the Clinton years under Trump so far, and they seem to be going higher. And you know, it's not, it's a real problem. I remember back in 2000, I think it was 2006 or 2004, when Pat Toomey was running to be senator in Pennsylvania, and there was a controversial ad that came out at the time because they had a quote of Pat Toomey saying, you know, like all this that we've done with free trade and exporting, you know, free markets, like this has helped, you know, pull, you know, a billion people out of poverty in places like China. And the Democrats put that ad out there as if it was a negative.
Yeah.
Pat Toomey cares about the Chinese, and they actually, and I'll never forget this, put a gong in the ad. They put a gong in the ad about talking about the Chinese. But it's like, this was, and I remember thinking to myself.
We never let them host the Oscars.
Yeah, I know. That's a great point. But I remember thinking to myself, like, how can you possibly look at a statement like that and think anything but positive about it? This is, like, yes, you can certainly make an argument that the American policy should favor the United States of America. Of course, this is the region we are, and that's what it, you know, prioritizing America is an understandable concept. But like the fact that American policy can also make life better for a billion people in China is a fantastic and wonderful achievement. We're not doing this just to make, you know, what's in this country a better place. Like, I want the whole world to adopt these policies so they can have it too.
Everybody should. We should, in every country, your leadership should be looking out for what's right for your country. Put your country first. However, the best way to put your country first is to A, make sure that it's strong, and B, be a good trading partner with everyone else. Don't go out to try to rub people's nose in it. Just say, I just want fair. I just want a fair deal. Because that, I mean, we don't want to be the car salesman of the used car lot that is like, no, what do I got to do? Let me go back and talk to my manager and just screw you and screw you and screw you for every dime because you'll never come back.
I used to say this about contract negotiations. Like, you never want to go out thinking that you've beat someone in a contract negotiation so badly that they were embarrassed. You want both sides to feel like they won.
Yeah.
You know, you want to walk out of there so that both sides are happy with the deal. You know, going back to the wife-husband like analogy, it's like, well, you know, you might get what you want in a short term, but is that improving your relationship if you threaten infidelity? It's not sustainable long term. These are really positive things that have helped people. We should want to encourage them, not discourage them.
And I've got an additional theory that free trade helps mitigate war. You know, there's that old saying, if goods don't cross borders, troops will. My thought is, if you've got a company and you start operating a division of it in another company or another country, and then you get a mistress over there, you don't want to bomb that country. Your mistress lives over there.
So that's
it. The more mistresses you have proliferating beautiful, from different corporations, the less likely to go to war.
May I just say, you're exactly right. I don't know about the mistress thing, but you're exactly right about war. That's why I started with my prediction. Trade wars, big trade wars, always the last step before big hot wars.
All right, we have much more to come in this year in review. We're going to have like fancy costume changes and a rabbit pulled out of a hat. It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to wear the Cher costume.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You look in that.
Yeah.
Underrated.
I'm a little puffy.
I'm not wearing pants.
Welcome back to the News and Why It Matters, a year in review. I told you that we were going to be doing some super fancy costume changes, and we also are now joined by Jason Buttrell.
You know it.
Oh, no, sorry.
Yay.
covering the top stories of the year, Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. The Kavanaugh confirmation hearings.
I don't remember that. It seems like 100 years ago, doesn't it?
It does seem like so long ago, doesn't it?
It does.
Because I think it aged everyone about 20 years.
Well, and also when he got in, it was obvious that women were going to cease to exist for the rest of ever. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why we haven't spoken about it, because like half of our population is gone.
Well, we know Kavanaugh was going to end all women. We know Pence was going to end all gays. And we know Cory Gardner banned birth control. So all of those things.
God, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. How are we still here?
I don't know.
So the interesting thing about Kavanaugh is how hard the left fought, saying that he's going to be a nightmare. And he's not. He's a nightmare for conservatives.
Yeah.
I mean, if he continues down this road.
Yeah. It's still early. I'm hopeful that we'll get, you know, it's the early signs are not good. And, you know, to review this, you know, you're talking about the year in review. When this started out, one of the first reactions was from people who are constitutionally minded, was that Brett Kavanaugh was a risk. He maybe wasn't so constitutionally pure. I mean, I remember Ben Shapiro very early on raising that warning flags. We did as well. You know,
big issues with privacy.
Big issue. Yeah, he had a very issue. Bad ruling on Obamacare. Yep. That a lot of people were worried about. And there's a reason why he wasn't on the initial list of judges. If you remember going back to the election, and we got dozens of calls like this over the election period, you know, because we were not, maybe some would describe us as maybe not the biggest Trump fans in the world. And people would call up and say, look, I've got to cast my vote for him because, first of all, no Hillary Clinton, which, of course, we all 100% were with you on that one. But also, like, yes, he'll have problems and he'll do things I don't like. But Supreme Court. And we would say, well, how do you know he's going to pick someone off that list? You don't know if he's going to pick someone off that list. And they said, well, he has the list out there and I believe him. And you know what? We said this on the air when it happened. With Gorsuch, they were right. He picked someone off that list. They were right. That left 20 people on the list. A new Supreme Court justice seat opens up. Who do they pick? Someone who was not on the original list.
That's a problem.
And that's a problem. They added Kavanaugh. And also, I will say, Amy Coney Barrett and a couple of others to the list to get to 25, I think it was. Now, when you have 20 list people on the original list, why are you adding people to the list? Well, and Kavanaugh was added. You know, he's been described as Karl Rove in a robe. It's not necessarily a good direction. He doesn't seem like he's going to be the hero of conservative values and or, more importantly, the Constitution. And, you know, again, a lot of this Roe versus Wade is a big issue. It's a big issue to me. And the idea that we may have blown this historic opportunity to get rid of one of the worst things that has ever, you know, is a scourge of the earth, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to legalized abortion. I mean, they may have missed that opportunity. At least the early signs are not good, and that would be a tragedy.
For those of us that were watching this, and like if you looked at his voting record, whether it was on Obamacare or whatever, you pretty much knew what the guy was all about. Mm-hmm. And in terms of that list, there must have been another list that Kennedy had and was like, look, I can retire, you know, I'm going to do this, but if you don't pick from my list, you know, like if you don't pick from this list, then I'm staying here at least until Bernie Sanders is elected president or whoever.
Right. That's interesting.
That must have been what it was. So even if you look at it in that terms, I mean, I can, again,
Donald Trump is not an ideologue. He's not an ideologue. He does not believe in the Constitution like we want, you know, like Scalia and Justice Roberts, Thomas. He's not an ideologue like that. He likes the wiggle room. He likes the big state. I don't think he has, at least his daughter, I don't think has a problem with abortion. I mean, you know, that's just kind of who they are.
You know what I'm surprised? I'm surprised that that entire experience did not radicalize Kavanaugh hardcore. Like, if I'm him, I am forever radicalized.
Digging in your heels.
That's what I was hoping for.
I'm in the smoking room with, you know, Gorsuch and, you know, Clarence Thomas every afternoon, you know, and I'm like soaking up all that knowledge, you know, and they're my models going forward. Because
just to kind of maybe put us back in that frame of mind, I want to play really quickly a clip of Lindsey Graham from those hearings addressing his fellow members of the committee. Watch.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Mm. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham. That you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. Yep. God, I hate to say it because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process, You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend.
Wow.
It really is powerful, and he was great on that. And that's the separation point of the whole Kavanaugh saga, which is really there are real questions of whether he's going to be a justice we can be happy with as conservatives. I think there's a real question there. The other side of that, though, is once he's nominated, A, he's absolutely qualified for the job, and B, the way they treated him was so inherently unfair. Mm-hmm. Principles tell me that I still need to stand up and fight for him because— You know, like what the way they treated him was horrible. And even though my preference, we talked about this at the time. You know, if they did, let's just say they were able to overturn this and get Kavanaugh thrown out, the one chance they kind of had the last minute to get someone in was Mike Lee. And to me, that Mike Lee would have been a much better outcome for rulings in the future than Brett Kavanaugh. But still, it was wrong to try to just slander this guy over with no information, with no evidence. And they tried to do it anyway, and you can't reward that behavior.
Yeah. Do you think it was a turning point, maybe, of the whole Me Too movement? I mean, I feel like...
I think it was.
Yeah,
there
was enough backlash, I think, that, you know, it was...
Yeah.
I mean, accusing someone of being a gang rapist with no evidence is clearly going too far.
And then the fallout as well, as what multiple accusers backed off of it and said, no, it didn't actually happen.
Yep.
When one of their main roles is like, why would they actually lie about this, you know, and bring this on themselves?
Well, they did. Yeah. Well, and obviously
2 weeks later.
Everyone knows why you would lie. You want to stop a conservative justice or someone you perceive as conservative from going in there, you know? I mean, and I will say, like, you see the turning point of the Me Too movement is an interesting point. A central figure in that whole saga, right, especially with Trump, was Michael Avenatti. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly a turning point with him. He reached so far to go to find the person who was saying gang rape, and it was such an obvious, blatant lie that he has now not only been tossed away by Republicans who were never with him, but even Democrats have abandoned him because they see him as someone who actually made that worse. Maybe it would have worked with our couple first fake allegations, but when you brought in that one, it was so ridiculous, I think America was like, all right, that, come on now. I mean, we don't believe that.
Why didn't they do this to Gorsuch? Why didn't they drag him through the mud? Why Kavanaugh? Was it the timing?
Two parts. I think he was replacing Scalia, Gorsuch. So, I mean, you know, it's conservative to conservative status quo. This was supposedly a moderate to a conservative. I think where we're going to get is a moderate to a moderate, unfortunately, or a moderate, maybe a little more conservative than Kennedy.
Well, but I mean, you know, you're saying they were assuming that Kavanaugh was conservative.
Yeah, like
I mean, we were telling them he's really not.
I know, but
he's not our top choice.
They didn't believe that. And I think the other thing, too, is I think they believed that they could win in 2020, maybe get the Senate, maybe be able to block all the nominations or force Trump into doing a Hardiman or a Merrick Garland type, someone who Democrats might actually vote for, because, you know, if they had a control of the Senate, they wouldn't let anybody through who was even mildly conservative. So they thought that if they could just get him blocked, make it to the election, and win the Senate, they had a chance.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that was really, at least the initial motivation. After that, it just became bloodlust, I think.
Jason, what's your take?
I agree. I agree with the status quo thing of it. Like that, he was exactly what we had before. It was also before, was this before Me Too?
Gorsuch?
Yeah.
I think it was.
I mean, this phenomenon hadn't even really begun
yet.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, if you put this maybe a month or so after Me Too, it might have been a little different.
But they might have tried that. I mean, like, I think if it wasn't Me Too, they would have tried something else with Kavanaugh. They would have tried anything to stop him. That one was too important to them because they thought, you know, it could have been a real disaster. And it's one of those things for them, you know, you're talking 30, 40 years of someone who's going to vote against you every time.
It's crazy how alcohol became one of the big things. He drank while he was in high school,
for
crying out loud. But now it was like, I remember, was it Cory Booker? Was like, did you drink on multiple occasions, yes or no?
Yes.
I'm just like, yes or no.
It
was,
yes.
Like, all you want to do is like, did I ever drink? Yeah, okay, fine, yes. Right. It was such a huge deal. Yeah. But now their shining star, Beto O'Rourke, the fact that he walked away from a DUI is going to be, no one's going to be talking about that.
No, it won't matter at all. And I love the idea that reporters in New York and Washington are criticizing drinking. Give me a break. These people, come past 9 p.m., they're all obliterated in bars all across littering those cities.
P.M.?
All right, back in a minute.
It's true. It's really more of a liquid one.
All day.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to A Year in Review, the News and Why It Matters style. We are joined by Jason Buttrell and Mr. Chad Prather. Yay. Back in studio.
Yay. Good to be with you guys.
Yes, thanks.
Every court needs a jester, and I feel overdressed.
I mean, I was going to ask, is this just something that you normally wear at
home? I just felt in the spirit of Christmas, and now that Santa is considered a woman by the Social Justice League, she's a nasty woman.
He's on the naughty list.
I put her on the naughty list.
Oh, sorry. She's on the naughty list. Shim is on the naughty list.
Let's get her Shim.
Then you have to start answering like a woman. You say, this old thing, well, I just threw it on.
Does it make me look
bad? Way to like pull out my boa.
But getting into the top stories of the year in 2018, I think that there was a very much overlooked top story when we're talking about big things that happened, which was the U.S. Embassy moved to Jerusalem. I think it kind of got buried with all of the drama.
May have been, and it's funny because we did a show on my show on the biggest story of the year, and nobody mentioned that. But it may actually end up being the most important story of the millennia because it has such spiritual ramifications. If you're a believer, there is no bigger story. There is nothing, there's no bigger miracle, there's no bigger sign, there's no bigger movement of the proverbial eternal clock than recognizing Israel as Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Yeah. Stu, there were, you know, multiple presidents before President Trump always promised to do it, and they didn't follow that through. This was something that President Trump said he was going to do, and in fact, he went out and he got it done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way to look at any president, Republican, Democrat, whatever, is to look at them and say, when they do good things, you say that they did good things, and when they did bad things, you say they do bad things. A lot of people seem to have lost this concept, but I can say a universal, unqualified praise to Donald Trump for this. This is something no one else was able to do. He just did it and didn't care. And this is the greatest side of Donald Trump, right? Like when sometimes he does things that I really don't like and he doesn't care about it, and that can be annoying.
And
but this, he's the only one who would go down that line. He was the only one willing to take the risk and take all the arrows, and it was fantastic.
And what was great about it is it was in his purview as well. This was not something where he said, I'm going to overreach and I'm going to do this. It was in his purview. The president, every 6 months, since when? 1980 or 1970, something like that? 80s. The president has had to sign every 6 months a delay on that. And he took it on and said, no, I'm not going to delay it. And when he first said it, my first thought, because I was still very skeptical of him, my first thought was, yeah, well, he'll delay, like the border. We'll delay it until it never happens. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He got it built, set a date, and moved on it.
I'm sorry, it was actually in the 90s, because it followed up with Reagan campaigning heavily against it, Bush following in his footsteps, campaigning heavily against it, and not only campaigning against it, actually being very pro the other side, being very anti-Israel on this. Even Reagan. Yeah. Because he was more worried about the bigger picture on like how this affected the Soviet Union and, you know, communism in the area and maintaining that balance and combating that. So he's very against it. But all of a sudden it changed. All of a sudden it was Clinton came out, and instead of it being in vogue to, you know, campaign against it, all of a sudden he changed and was like, hey, no, I'm for it. So on the campaign trail, he was like, yep, Israel is the capital, and we will, you know, we will move the embassy over to Jerusalem. He was very, very adamant about it. So Congress took that and said, okay, yeah, finally, here we go, because there's a lot of pro-Israel people in Congress. And they were like, all right. So they introduced the bill. They got it passed. It was sent through. But then Clinton all of a sudden changed.
He wanted to move it to Little Rock.
And he can't do that, Mr. President.
There is no Jewish contingency in Little Rock of which to speak of.
That's exactly right. So obviously he was against it, you know, of being in Jerusalem. So every 6 months, that's what you said. He kept delaying it. And that has been the standard going forward all throughout Trump. It's kind of amazing. Like, we were there. Like, we felt that this was going to be the biggest story.
Yeah, and when you say we... You were there in Jerusalem.
Personally there.
While this was going on. So tell us about that experience.
Well, we have actually have a big special coming out on this in the next couple of months, probably February-ish. that documents the entire thing. And then we started, we're like, you know, Glenn told us, look, this, we really can't put this in the hands of the media because they really haven't been, they haven't covered, been covering this thing, you know, fairly. So really, we're probably the only ones that are going to do this. So we went over to go do it. And I mean, the lead up to this, this was the day of, I think, was it the 15th or the 14th, 5th? Yeah, I think it was the 15th, maybe. Also coincided with the 70th anniversary of the founding of the Nation of Israel. I mean, if this is like a, you know, this is, you know, biblical, really. You know, like this day was meant for a purpose. We're unequivocally putting our, you know, our support behind them, showing them that we were support Israel, but also having it coincide with the day that they were founded. This is amazing. This is an amazing day. But there were also other things going on. The days of rage from Palestine, from Gaza, where, you know, they were seeing pictures right now, right there of it. You know, it was just, it was wild, the riots that were going on. So this was kind of coming to a head all at the same time. And it was either going to be very, very, very bad, or maybe something miraculous was going to happen. But when we got over there, we noticed that, you know, the media was doing what they always do. They spin it in a certain way. They always, you know, as these riots were coming, they were already having the story, you know, already made up in their mind that they were just going to paint Israel as the bad guy. They were going to paint Donald Trump as a co-conspirator with Israel, that he was just so horrible and, you know, basically causing all of this to happen.
You know, what's so amazing is everyone, the reason why the presidents have never done it is because, oh, it's going to set the Middle East on fire. Apparently not.
Yeah. No more so than it always has been.
Right. Yeah. Right.
There it is.
It just drew attention. It still smolders.
It smolders on, you know. And I think that this has to be, you talk about the stars aligning and divine providence and just the finger of God, however you want to define it. This is one of those things that it's almost like a biblical barbarian King Cyrus, who's a pagan, and everybody looked at it and said, oh my gosh, this guy. But God winds up using him to do something. And here, in my opinion, is the biggest argument for Donald Trump not being anti-Semitic, which is what everybody wants to accuse him of doing. Mm-hmm. If he were, this is something that he could have bypassed very easy. He could have signed off on that thing, another 6 months, signed off on it again.
Every other president has gotten a pass on that thus far.
But, you know, still, Hollywood hammers him. And let's face it, that's a Jewish community. The mainstream media in so many ways. It's so much of the Jewish community is still fighting against Donald Trump on a constant, daily, scrutinizing basis. And here's a guy who did something that no other president did, that every Jewish mind, every Jew, and it proves that it's not about race, it's about grace, it's not about real estate, it's about doing the right thing. And I think that's exactly what it did when it came to moving it to Jerusalem.
I think that I remember the headlines at the time being very anti-Israel. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw that because, of course, Chad, as you mentioned, they were highlighting the riots at that time just because that's where the news was. And, you know, it was very much painted to be Israel is firing all of these things to these innocent people who are just passively protesting.
Yeah, and
it's interesting, the media spin.
The coverage is always obviously horrible on this. One part I'll remember from this the entire time was the mockery that came of Donald Trump put Jared Kushner in control of this. And what a joke that was. His son-in-law, you got to give him credit. He was the biggest force behind this. He fought really hard to make sure that the Jerusalem thing actually happened when no one, including me, probably first and foremost, I mean, I did not think this would come with a Donald Trump presidency, and he deserves all the credit in the world for it. The fact that actually happened, I mean, it's almost borderline miracle.
Well, and the beauty of it is he has that bull in a china shop mentality that many hate, many love. Mm-hmm. It's wherever it falls, depending on how he's reacting on something and what you feel about it. But he's been immune to the mainstream media. He's been immune to political correctness, and this was a perfect sign when he stepped out and did what he did.
The media spin that you're talking about was I've never seen anything like this in my life. We all kind of have this distrust in the media right now, but what I saw there, it blew my mind. When you in Israel, they all go to the same hotel. They all get the same fixers to take them around. They all talk to the same people, and they all get together and say, hey, we're going to ask these questions. They don't care about the answers. And half the time, they don't even show the answers. I went to a press conference with Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, and a few other senators, and they were all asked the same thing because they didn't prepare for anything. I went to Gaza, and they were all asking the IDF the same questions, and the IDF guy's like, I cannot believe this. Like, do you actually care to hear the truth? Yeah. So I straight up asked him. I was like, what's the context for all, like, what's going on? And he looked at me like, oh my gosh, who are you with? Oh, Glenn Beck? All right. Want to come back to my house and eat dinner? Like, finally.
It was so funny.
Glenn, really quickly, do you think there are any, you know, long-term, what are the long-term effects of this?
The third temple will be rebuilt and Jesus will come.
There you go.
Okay. That's really long term. Yeah. I was going more like short.
I don't know how long. I think that could be short long term. I think that could be in the next 20 years.
Shorter term than we think. I would like to just reiterate here. This was all of us at the table giving Donald Trump credit where credit was due.
I thought
we
of
said
that.
It at the
that
time. We're saying that now.
Balls and strikes.
We like to be objective. We call balls and strikes here at the Blaze. We will be back in just a minute.
Yeah, that's right. No heating, and all of a sudden, he's a bad influence on all of us.
Welcome back. I am joined by some new faces. We have Jeff Fisher,
Boo.
Mr. Jeff Fisher from Chewing the Fat, and we have Mr. Pat Gray from Pat Gray.
Yay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeffy.
That's
people don't like
the
you.
The crowd went crazy. When my name was said, did you notice that?
I know when my name was said.
I heard them at home cheering their TV screens on. Yeah. It was so loud. It was crazy.
It's incredible.
So talking about the top stories of the year, now this wasn't necessarily just one top story, but I think it's something important to discuss is, you know, just the rising culture of outrage over, you know, not agreeing with someone 100% on something, and celebrities who are losing their jobs now over something that they've done in the past. So most recently, we have Kevin Hart, who, you know, that was a man who lost the Academy Awards?
Oscars.
Yeah. The Oscars, yes. So he lost that gig because he had previously, several years ago,
He
tweeted hate. He's a bigot. Yes, so he made, you know, a joke about his son being gay, which his son's not. And then all of a sudden, years later, he's not allowed to host a show, even though he had, you know, he had come out, he had apologized for it. It wasn't enough. You have James Gunn, who, you know, lost his job on Guardians of the Galaxy, which that one was a big one because those cast members rallied around that guy and said,
still didn't get him rehired.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Which was amazing.
But, you know, we have all of these special interest groups.
Yeah, Tua Tagovailoa.
Alabama?
Yeah, from Alabama, who won the Heisman Trophy, and so people start digging in
Kyler
his...
Kyler Murray won the Heisman.
No, Kyler Murray.
So what you were thinking
was
Tua should have won.
I didn't even need to say that hard name.
Tua should have won the Heisman. Roll Tide.
Yes. Well, but anyway, Kyler Murray was 14 years old when they dug up when he said what he said. And what did he do? He called his friends queers, which is a word that is used all the time.
Even in their
own. Right.
It's in the description of their group.
Yes. Yeah, is it one of the Qs in
Yeah, it's
in
one
the
of the
bag?
Q's in the quilt bag or the LGBTQIA2+ thing. It's the first Q. Queer and then question.
How do you know it's not the second Q?
Well, because they used to say lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, or queer.
Right.
So I think they started, yeah.
They could have inserted questioning before queer.
It's possible.
We'll have to get that.
We usually don't
ruling
do
on that,
though.
No, I mean, Hart is, you know, it's a ridiculous one. Again, we kind of talked about this at the time, but it's your goal if you are an activist for one of these causes, right? Like, let's say you're a gay rights activist. What's your goal? Is your goal to just, like, get people fired, or is your goal to try to convince people's opinions, to win over hearts and minds, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Kevin Hart, you got what you wanted, right?
Sure
like, this
did.
Guy, if he was making, you know, and the jokes that I heard, I didn't hear all of them probably, but the ones I heard were pretty darn tame. You know, they were just, but, you know, okay, you think they're offensive now. You can call them out on that. But after this happens, and it's happened over the past few years, he said, look, I don't, you know, believe that way. I don't have any.
And he's apologized multiple times the years.
In the past.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like some new thing. He was only responding to the controversy. He said, that's not the way I feel. You won him over. You actually took a guy who you say was homophobic, and now he's not homophobic,
that's
and you're
win.
Punishing him for this.
It's a win. Leave him alone.
Right.
No, you can't.
But that's not what they want, is
no.
it?
No,
it's not. They just want to destroy you.
They do.
Well, they want to shame people into complying with
into believing as they believe.
Right. I just saw a recent headline that I guess there were people who were mad at Mattel because they demanded a same-sex wedding Barbie.
Yeah, a couple wanted to buy a present for a same-sex couple that was getting married, and they couldn't find a same-sex Mattel Barbie dolls.
Why don't you just buy another Barbie?
Just buy two.
Well, that's what they ended up doing, Stu, but that's not good enough.
Why? Never good enough.
They need to be together. So they have a meeting with Mattel. That meeting, you know, is going to take place, and Mattel is going to either
Here's
say yes or no.
Mattel should say at the meeting. Shut up.
Buy two Kens.
Buy two Kens.
Yeah. Why are you
That's
here?
Not our responsibility to make same-sex couples for you. Wow. Not doing it. Sorry. Wow. No.
Why
I think, like,
you
no. This is all of these.
Donate.
Because it's not all liberals doing this. The James Gunn one was largely conservatives who did it because Gunn was criticizing Ben Shapiro, which was kind of started this. They went back, found Gunn's old tweets, and got him fired from Guardians of the Galaxy. And again, I think all of these are bad. All of them are bad.
Stop it.
You stop it. You know, yes. I think this you know, the addicted to outrage thing that Glenn talked about all year is vital here because I really think rather than these causes, it's not about gay rights. It's not about whether he really said something offensive about, he made an offensive joke about pedophiles or something was the James Gunn one. It's never about those causes. It's about people wanting to feel alive. They want to feel something, like they've accomplished something in their life. So they tweet. Oh, I got that guy fired. And I'll always remember that was part of the 10,000 people who tweeted about getting some dumb movie director fired. Like, what does that do for a person? I think if we all kind of step back and just say, like, I don't care. You know, the best example of this all year, I thought, was Dan Crenshaw. Dan Crenshaw was criticized by Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live. Kind of, they said, oh, he's got a boy wearing an eye patch. I don't know. He's like a war hero or something. Got hurt.
Yeah.
And instead, that happened. Think about this: a week before an election. This guy's a politician now. He's running for office. He could have easily come out and taken full advantage of this
classy.
Controversy.
So great.
Instead, he's like, we need to get over this. We don't need to freak out every time someone makes a joke.
Yeah.
He went on Saturday Night Live.
In a different way, he did take full advantage of it, which was great.
Yes, he did. Yes. He did. He did the right thing, though, in the right way. And he got nonstop praise for it. He went on Saturday Night Live. He made fun of Pete Davidson a little bit. They kind of had a nice couple words together.
Pete Davidson kept his job. Crenshaw was fine.
Yep. Everyone
Everybody's
was fine.
Happy.
Everyone thinks more of both of them.
Yeah.
What a great outcome from something like that. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we all should just relax a little bit and, you know, learn to enjoy life. Realize that sometimes people are going to say things that you don't like. Get over it.
That's why we need to start teaching children in elementary school how to get along and that they're all the same.
They're all
exactly
the same.
Exactly the same.
Right.
No.
All boys, all girls.
We're learning that
really,
in the UK.
They aren't even boys and girls. They're just all the same.
Yeah.
No.
They're teaching.
Well, yeah, they are.
They're teaching at several schools now in the UK that all genders can have menstruation periods.
Yeah. Oh, menstrual periods.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody has a menstrual cycle.
Have you ever, Sue, have you ever
never
had
have. A, never have had a
what? You guys
particular,
have never
what?
Had a menstrual cycle.
Yeah. That's
are
not
you kidding?
A,
are you lying right now?
I'm going to go back and check some older tweets, I'll tell you that.
Get me fired immediately.
Can you imagine teaching kids falsehoods like that? It doesn't make any sense.
The same schools are at the same time telling children that their uniforms, there's no more dresses, no more skirts. They're all pants and shirts. They want that uniform look, man. So there's no, they want that gender equal.
Well, why not make the males wear the skirts then?
Right.
I want to wear a skirt.
That's the
why not force the male? That's
the
patriarchy
place.
Talking. I'll tell you that.
The man.
Go ahead, Stowe.
I mean, a skirt can probably be freeing. I don't know. I've never. Jeffy, would you like
that's to? That's actually true.
Yes. Okay. No. I mean, I don't. You know. That 2 + 2 = 5 thing, like, seemed
it's
like a fictional thing, but like here we are saying it.
We're in it,
and you can make an argument, right, that it shouldn't matter as much.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, well, you know, if someone, you know, if there's a tomboy, you shouldn't discourage someone from being a tomboy, and you can make like you could say everyone should be treated equally. Like, those are all really good concepts, and they get taken to this place of like, no, actually, you should just deny what's actually really happening.
Right.
Like, we should just say, no, a boy's a girl and a girl's a boy.
Yeah.
That's just like, it's taken to this ridiculous step, and I can't imagine it's anything other than, you know, Glenn, again, postmodernism was what he talked about in there, and it's just like throwing the whole system
sure
off.
Is. If you're a kid and you have, an older sister in your home with your parents, you know there's a difference. I mean, if you're a young boy and you have an older sister and your mom and dad are there, if you're growing up in a household with a full family like that, a regular family, then you know there's a difference, right? So if you go to school and the teacher says, no, there's no difference, you're like, there is.
We're setting up the false premise that you have to be the same to be equal. And you don't.
You don't.
We don't. Yeah. We can celebrate our differences and still have equality.
That's a great point. Really quickly before we go, Jeffy, do you see this issue getting better or worse in the new year?
I think more and more people will come together. It'll be a beautiful thing. We're all for one.
Okay, you're lying still.
I used to think there was a point in which people would just get sick of this and grow tired of it. It seems to be their favorite thing. Yeah. I mean, I think it seems to be the favorite thing, pastime of America. So I don't know. I think it's getting worse before it gets
better.
Yeah. Getting worse? Mm-hmm. Good. We have so much to look forward to in 2019. I am so excited. But seriously, we're going to take a little bit of time off. I'm sure you guys are really excited about it. I don't know if you deserve it, but I know that I do. So I'm going to have a lot of fun and take some time off, go get married, enjoy the holidays.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Good luck on
that. Thank you. Thank you.
Are you going? You're going somewhere after?
Yes. Yeah, the Dominican.
Nice.
Yeah. Actually, we're getting married in the Dominican.
Wow.
So
I'd ask who's the lucky guy, but it's limiting, too limiting. And I want to make sure that it could be of any gender.
That's a great point. Yes. I think today he's identifying as a guy, but I'll have to ask
him. We'll have to ask him.
So,
skirt didn't say so.
But we will be back in the new year with all new episodes, and we hope you guys have a wonderful, safe holidays. We'll see you then.
There was a look at you there for a second. It was like, did he really mean that? Did he see him in a skirt? That was real suspicion.
Thanks for listening to the News and Why It Matters. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you'd like to watch the program, become a Blaze TV subscriber and start your free trial now at blazetv.com.